attaching ourselves to those wild horses of commerce in Wall Street is how we're going to more rapidly electrify our country. We can't just do it as a cultural movement.
Hi there. Welcome to Everyday Climate Champions, where we speak with community members here in the San Francisco Bay Area about how they're putting real climate solutions into action.
Hi there. Thank you for joining me, George D., your host for this episode of Everyday Climate Champions. Today's topic is Building Electrification, a Climate Solution with a Built-in Public Health Benefit.
Many of us may be surprised to find out that the energy our homes consume contributes to 13% of U.S. emissions alone, despite the wide availability of electric-powered heating and cooling systems.
But even in states like California, where climate policy and climate action is incredibly progressive, the adoption of electric-powered heating and cooling is incredibly low, at 7%.
Recently, I was able to sit down with Sean Armstrong of Redwood Energy, based in the Bay Area.
He's worked for 25 years in building electrification, designed the retrofit and new construction of more than 10,000 all-electric residences, and provided legal and technical support for dozens of gas bans nationwide. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely, George.
For the folks listening today that may not know much about building electrification, could you tell me a little bit about what it is and why it's important today and for the future?
Since the late 1800s, there's been a building electrification movement, primarily driven by safety concerns, because having combustibles, be it coal or wood or gas, they start fires disproportionately. So today, electrification is around safety still, but we're talking climate safety and we're talking indoor air quality, because having a gas stove, for instance, is just as bad as having a cigarette smoker who smokes in the house living with you. If you live with a cigarette smoker, that increases your use of asthma medication, your likelihood of a heart attack or cardiopulmonary disease and premature birth of your children, and also cancer. The number one source of formaldehyde in your life is the effluent from your gas stove.
It makes sense that focusing on public health turns this into a bit more of a pressing issue. Could you tell me a little bit about what initially interested you in building electrification and what prompted you to eventually start your business in the electrification area?
In the college, there was a demonstration house on campus that was teaching how to use renewable energy and how to not use fossil fuels. I got to live there eventually in this immersive environment back in 1999. They had solar panels and wind turbines and batteries. Got to drive an electric van. It was fun. So when I decided I was going to go into building development, I wanted to do the greenest possible, and I also wanted to be doing affordable housing. And so I found a way to marry those two, because renewable energy can lower utility bills, which can help out low-income households. And so I went into affordable housing, learning how to do all-electric design so that we could use the most renewable energy. And so the more we got rid of fossil fuels, the lower the utility bills got, because, you know, solar panels on the roof make electricity. And the financial benefits from cheap solar produced 5% more apartments, or on average about 3 apartments per 65-unit apartment complex. So for less, we can build more, and all-electric lowers construction costs, so we can also build a little bit more profitably. That's where I'm at right now, is I'm showing people how the business of all-electric and renewable energy makes for a better project.
Having spent so much time on building electrification, I'm curious what you might say are your greatest accomplishments.
We started in 2007. And at that time, it was heavily opposed by the Energy Commission, all the utilities. There wasn't anyone in California at building science conferences who said, good job for building all electric. Instead, when I'd go to building science conferences and present on our data, people wouldn't talk with me. They'd literally turn their back to me if I was like, hey, let's talk about electrification. And so after a whole bunch of years of saying it, the next big step was getting a legal opinion that would allow cities to do it. So in 2018, after my mother-in-law died in the Tubbs fire, our first climate change-induced fire in Santa Rosa, I was pretty flipped out. So we hired Shute Mahalian Weinberger, leading environmental lawyers in California, and myself and the Rocky Mountain Institute and the Building Decarbonization Coalition, the three of us paid for and shaped and informed this legal opinion. We knew what we wanted it to do. So the lawyers helped us figure out what were the appropriate precedents to say, yeah, Berkeley can ban gas in its building code. And now, so of 60 cities around California, and 10 cities have already banned gas in Massachusetts. So I feel like the big move was getting the legal ability to ban gas and to have it happen not at the state or federal level, because people are just too bought out at that level, but to have it go to the city level. Fossil fuel companies don't put money into city council races. And so we could get real democracy there.
Electrification has a lot of impacts, whether it's economic or health-oriented, but the connection between electrification and climate change is becoming even stronger today. I'm curious, from your perspective, why do you think building electrification is gaining momentum today?
2009 is when we first got computers added to heat pumps in the United States. Their efficiency went up by like 40% to 100%, and they started to be able to be used when it was really cold outside, like negative 30 Fahrenheit. By the way, when I say heat pump, that's a reversible air conditioner. Air conditioners are heat pumps, and heat pumps are air conditioners that only work in one direction. Like an air conditioner just does chilling. But if you make it go in two directions, a heat pump is both an air conditioner and a space heater. So I feel like things started slowly in 2009. I installed one of those heat pumps in my own house. And then we started demonstrating in apartment complexes and all over the country and in Canada, people have been building all electric homes and solar powering them, but just slowly. I feel like what did change the conversation was the Berkeley ban. What happened at the state regulatory level is that they were anticipating banning gas in construction like in 2035 or 2045. And a lot of people were startled when cities started banning it in 2019. You know, there were almost 30 cities that worked immediately after Berkeley to ban gas also all over the Bay Area. That changed conversations, that changed architects' practices and mechanical engineers' practices, because when you ban natural gas in Berkeley, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, Hayward, all of these big cities in the Bay Area, that's the home of architects and engineers who work nationwide. And so they all got familiarized with all electric construction because they had to. So that led to another big movement forward. Everyone's done at least one project now. They understand the technologies and they see how it can save time and money to design that way. I think the next step, after cities and architects and engineers and the whole culture of design starts changing in the Bay Area and in California, I just point to the Green New Deal, which got renegotiated into the Inflation Reduction Act. That has a ton of money, like $12,000 or so per house worth of incentives to electrify. That's a lot of money. And I'm seeing a change in developers that I'm working with right now, where I come forward and I say, I realize you're trying to do a gas and electric hybrid project, but if you do all electric, you get $12,000 an apartment, and that changes their mind. I'm seeing the next stage in the evolution of the all electric movement is a more broad-based, financially driven choice for people who are like kind of on the fence. They were thinking, oh, I'll put in gas because I know how to work with that. And then they say, well, if it's $12,000 a residence, maybe I'll learn something. I'll learn how to do all electric. It's worth it for me to go to college for a day or two and figure out how to do this.
As you suggested, tradespeople that install the gas or hybrid appliances are typically the ones that are pushing for the installation of those types of appliances. What would you say are the biggest hurdles towards electrification within this industry for housing, for remodeling and construction?
You're right that the contractors who come to people's homes have a very large influence on what products get chosen. And I've seen a fair number of contractor retraining programs. In California, we're seeing utilities step forward and try to actually train contractors to get in their heads, get in their wallets, show them how they can make some more money if they're doing all electric by offering them incentives. So all electric utilities are starting to take the gloves off. They see that they have new technologies to work with. They've got induction stoves, way better than the old-fashioned electric resistance. They've got cold climate heat pumps. So I see utilities stepping up now that they have a new opportunity to change the game in their local territories and make more money. I keep on coming back to this because while electrification began somewhat as a cultural movement of environmentalists trying to rapidly address climate change, now the investor-owned utilities, Wall Street, they see a business opportunity. You know, they've seen that since 2009, fracking has not been that profitable. And so Wall Street's been saying, if we go over to all electric design, that's where all the regulators want us to go to. Yeah, let's do it. Let's make a bunch of money. Let's take away the gas customers and make them into electric customers. I think that attaching ourselves to those wild horses of commerce in Wall Street is how we're going to more rapidly electrify our country. You know, we can't just do it as a cultural movement.
In the context of electrifying everything, what would you share with everyday homeowners and everyday renters that want to take part in a growing movement to electrify their homes?
If you are, say, in California, where only 7% of our homes are all electric, you probably have a gas stove, a gas dryer, a gas furnace, and a gas water heater. And you go through each of those four appliances and you either replace them with electric when they break, or you replace them with electric devices on an accelerated and planned schedule. You're going to say, I want to get rid of my gas stove first. Or you say, my furnace is breaking and it's wintertime and I really don't want it to have a go out on me, so I'm going to put in a heat pump. You can look around and think, what is the least expensive way that I could electrify some appliance? And that would probably be your stove, because you can get $100 and $200 countertop induction ranges. I cook for my three children and myself on a $130 two-burner induction range. And I'm a good cook and I produce a lot of food. You've addressed only maybe 5% of the climate change from your house, but you've addressed a very large health impact. And also you get a better stove. So I'd say start there. And then after that, just get rid of the gas dryer. And then your space heating system. So you get an inverter, heat pump, and it reduces your air conditioning load in the summer. And then you can start heating with electricity in the wintertime efficiently. And the last one I'd say is the water heater. Just because you have to get a plumber involved. But the water heater can be easy because it's just a tank. And you can wheel the old one out and plug the new one in. So a retrofit-ready heat pump water heater. No rewiring necessary. We can't just make this a personal responsibility. We have to make this a societal responsibility. And the way that's happening is that in the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, they've announced that in 2027, there will be no more gas appliances sold between Santa Rosa and Gilroy from north to south and over to Vacaville to the east. And the California Air Resources Board just announced that there'll be no more gas appliances sold in California, the whole state, in 2030. That's the kind of action that we have to take to achieve real climate change mitigation, pushing cities and large organizations, agencies, to start putting in place decarbonization policies.
That's incredible. Thank you for breaking it down. There's certainly a lot that we can do as everyday climate champions, and I appreciate you giving us more depth and context.
Sean, thanks for showing us not only how important building electrification is for public health and curbing emissions, but also showing us how anybody can get started to participate in this mission.
Absolutely, Jared. Take care.
Hey, listeners. Sean has shared some great resources on how to get involved with work on building electrification. Please check out the show notes below to follow the links. And if you'd like to learn about another approach to solar power to electrify homes, I definitely recommend checking out episode 2 on our podcast. For this episode of Everyday Climate Champions, the sound designers were Dennis Heisem and Trevor Skirby. The executive producer was Dahlia Masacci. I'm George D. Our full production team is listed below in the show notes.
You've been listening to Everyday Climate Champions, presented by the Climate Reality Project's Bay Area chapter. If you know any local folks who would make great guests, please drop us an email. As Climate Reality founder and former U.S. Vice President Al Gore says, solving the climate crisis is within our grasp, but we need people like you to stand up and act. To To learn more, please visit climaterealitybayarea.org. See you next time.